Welcome to the Visual Storytelling Podcast. My name is Fred Ranger, and I'm so happy that you're joining us today for another inspirational conversation. Today I have a special guest. His name is Brian Atkins, and he's a lifestyle and landscape photographer based in Portland, Oregon, originally from San Francisco, and he's been interested in photography for his entire life, so we're going to chat about that. But he's only picked up a camera in 2017, but already is an accomplished photographer, published in magazines, and he's got a very, very interesting body of work. So first of all, Brian, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
We've been chatting over Instagram over the past few weeks, and I was super happy to get you on the show because a couple aspects of your photography I really, really like. So your nature photography is really organic. It's really something that, you know, a lot of people can relate to, especially if you're, you know, from the Pacific Northwest and so on and so forth. It's like if we were there. But before you became that, you know, photographer that we see on Instagram today and on your website, how did you become a photographer in the first place?
Long story short, I've definitely always been interested in photography. I think when I was maybe between the ages of like 7 to 12, we were on like a family vacation in Yosemite. My grandpa was taking like family portraits and stuff, and I was kind of interested that like he had a camera and was doing that. And then sometime after the trip, my grandparents lived like a block or two from my house growing up, so I went over to their house after this trip, and their camera was on like the, you know, the entryway furniture piece. I wanted to play with it. My mom was like, "Oh no, it's not a toy. Like, here, I'll show you it." And we scrolled through some of the photos, and she was like, "See, look, here we all are from the Yosemite trip." So when I was a kid, for whatever reason, I was definitely just drawn into cameras. And then another family trip, I was probably age of like 11, we passed by a gallery or art store, some kind of store, and there was a photo print of like a beach landscape, something nature-ish. And I was like, "Mom, like, what is that in the window?" And she was like, "Oh, that's a photo print. Someone took that photo and they're trying to sell it, and they printed it." And as a kid, I found that interesting. So I was definitely like drawn towards what a camera does and what you can do with like photos just naturally at like such a young age. And then it definitely became more of like an interest and wanting to have a camera when I got into like skateboarding and BMX and dirt jump mountain bikes and things when I was probably about 13. And that's when I kind of started to actually study photos a little bit more in video. We made really bad like videos with an old flip camera type of thing, like recorder from like Target, you know, for like $60 or whatever back in 2007. So that's when it like was put into practice. But again, the interest of like cameras and what they do for whatever reason was definitely there from just like a young age and just being naturally into that stuff.
Yeah, but isn't it cool again to have those $60 old school cameras to get that look, that 90s look?
Yeah, if they still worked, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, it's funny you say this because the previous podcast, Tyson Martin and I were discussing, and I was telling him how I got started with a Sony Handycam with the cassettes, the 8mm cassette. And some people are selling these cameras for like a couple $100 on eBay. I'm like, wow, there really is a movement towards old school 90s type of vibes, I guess.
Yeah, there definitely is.
Cool stuff. But you did mention BMX and skateboard, and I see a lot of photographers starting by documenting, you know, their friends or their own endeavors into the sports. Were you part of that culture, and were you the guy with the camera who was basically documenting whatever your friends were doing, or were you actually a skateboarder yourself being photographed most of the times?
Oh, definitely a mix. I was never super good at like skating or BMX. I feel like I kind of peaked in 2015. So I would just ride for fun with my buddies. And then whenever my friends wanted to get a clip, especially when like the iPhone came around, that's when it kind of just became like a second nature thing. So like I said, like 2007 or something, we had like a little garbage video camera and kind of tried to make some things, I think tossed them on YouTube. And then at some point they got deleted. But yeah, once we were older, like 2009 all the way up through probably honestly 2019, once I moved out of California, all those years, 10 years or whatever. Yeah, I was just using iPhones, really getting clips here and there. And then sometimes taking photos too. Like, I think we're in SF and we were just on like the top of a hill and it was like a really nice scenic background. And I was like, hey, dude, like, what if you just bunny hopped into this hill? Like, just do the biggest bunny hop you can and I'll just shoot this photo. And I had like an iPhone 3G probably, or like a 4 or maybe a 5. It was pretty early in like the iPhone days. And it was still like the sickest photo. He was just like mid bunny hop, like super tweaked out, like perfect timing with it. And it had some skyscrapers of SF in the background, and it's still one of my favorite shots to today. And yeah, it went into a giant hill bomb and he just bombed the hill on his bike. And I was like, cool. So it
Nice.
was kind of like, that's kind of how a lot of it went. It was never really like really conscious. It was more of just like, oh, this might look sick. Like, let's get a phone clip or let's get a phone photo. I never had a camera till 2017, like you said. So I didn't really have much to kind of pursue that when we were riding at like a younger age and kind of going out every weekend for like 8 to 10 hours.
For sure, for sure. And you do cover a lot of, genre of photography. I mean, from landscape to urban to portraits and so on and so forth, product photography too. So what is there one genre that you're like, this is my little treat, when I do this type of photography, or you love them all, you embrace them all, whether it's client or personal work?
I'd say at this point, landscape is pretty much the top, and I guess paired up with lifestyle. I think when I first started, I was more interested in kind of doing everything. So yeah, I was shooting like portraits, macro, landscape, literally everything, just trying to figure it out. And then once I had that experience, that's when I pretty much just shifted and was like doing landscape for fun. And then the lifestyle client brand work stuff kind of came from that, because when you're on the way to go see whatever landscape or waterfall, there's a story along the way that you can capture with you and your buddies, just walking along the trail, eating snacks, someone's putting on like a rain jacket, or whatever it might be. So I think it naturally progressed into lifestyle, capturing the story of like what we're actually doing, rather than just like, hey, here's a beautiful waterfall. And then you kind of have like those personal memories with the people you're with, in addition to like the scenic views that you're chasing after.
Would you say the move to the Pacific Northwest actually accelerated that love for nature? And again, might be super cliche what I'm saying. I know that in SF there's plenty of nature you can photograph too, but I don't know. I have this romantic thinking that when you go into Pacific Northwest, you become an outdoor guy and you just embrace nature day in and day out.
I feel like it did and didn't. I think for me personally, it was more of like, I don't know, you could almost call it a change in like identity, because I was from California, 40 minutes from the coast, and grew up going to the beach all the time with my family and surfing and skimboarding. And I really thought I was like this beach guy. Like, I enjoyed the ocean and the beach and the beach landscapes. And I went to school an hour north of San Francisco at Sonoma State, and that was probably 45 minutes from the Sonoma coast. And so all of the early landscape stuff I was doing when I got like my actual camera, and before when I was just using my iPhone, it was always centered around the coast. And so moving to the PNW was more of like a change in identity from being this coastal person to being like, wait, I actually think I really enjoy the mountains and the forest and like waterfalls and cloudier, foggier, overcast, like moodier weather. And it's just like a total polar opposite than growing up in sunny California. And I kind of discovered that on a trip to Portland in 2019, pretty much right after I like got my super awesome Sony system. After I had taken a break from photography, I actually quit for a year, from I think mid 2018 to mid 2019. So I bought this Sony system and then went on this trip to Portland in mid 2019. And then that was when I realized that like almost I'd been like living a lie. And I was like, I don't like the beach as much as I thought compared to these forests and woods. And then I pretty much moved up later that year and just haven't looked back.
Nice. And I really, really like your landscape photography. And I did touch upon it in the opening of this podcast, but your editing style, or your processing style, should I say, it's very natural, very earthy, very untouched, right? So I could you talk about that? Like, did you find your style at some point? You're like, wow, this is what talks to me when an image doesn't seem overly edited or processed?
Yeah, it was definitely like trial and error, as probably most of us photographers do. When I started, I'd just go in Lightroom, I'd just crank things almost at random and think it looks good. And they were basically coming out as like over contrast, oversaturated, pretty gnarly, in all honesty. If you scroll down my Instagram feed, there are some old edits, if I'm not mistaken. Might take you a while to get there at this point, but my old like edits are still there. I've left them up. And then I don't know, I think one day I was like, I don't really have a style. I don't know if I understand Lightroom. Like I'm just randomly doing this stuff in post. So I think I tried to figure out something, and I think I kind of landed on like a more natural look, if I'm not mistaken, and then kind of just kept playing. And at one point things are really desaturated, but it wasn't like these really bright, like saturated, colorful edits that I was doing before. Yeah, just like studying people's work too on Instagram or whoever, and trying to figure out like what clicks with you is just kind of how I ended up there. I will say Short Stash, if you follow him on Instagram, he was like the defining moment where I ha don't think I had seen a body of work that was super cohesive. Like how his editing style and his shooting style is, you can just tell he knows exactly what he's doing and why, and the way he uses depth and frames things. And then how he color grades things, it's very like methodical. And I think he was a large influence, which is also a cliche answer, honestly. But it wasn't really like, oh, I want to copy his style. It was more of like, this is how I needed my photos to look without ever having known how I needed them to look, if that makes sense. And I was kind of like, after seeing his work, I realized I needed a very cohesive style in camera and in post-processing.
Yeah,
And
man,
then that just kind of led to the color grading that I've landed on and
I
making
didn't.
things natural but stylistic.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and I didn't know Short Stash. I'm following in now. Is I can see the link. I can see the link, and wow, he's very, very talented. Maybe I'll put it in the show description also because it's worth having a look. Speaking
Yeah.
of cameras, I think it's inevitable that at one point we would talk about gear. This is not a gear show, but you and I seem to have an affection for a certain type of cameras. So, and I think we have a similar, I would say, trio of cameras or combo of cameras with, and they happen to have a red dot in the front. So can we talk about our addiction? Sorry, can we talk about our love for these cameras? But more seriously, like how did you ended up with one, two, let's say one, two, three Leica cameras in
Yeah.
your arsenal?
So I mean basically this goes back to before I even owned a camera also. I'd somehow heard about Leica. I don't really know how, but this was maybe like 2014, 2015. 2016-ish, kind of like a few years right before I got my camera in 2017. And I was just like drawn in because they look really nice, obviously, like they're aesthetically pleasing. And so from that point, it was just in the back of my head, like, okay, I think I want a Leica. I ended up going to the Leica store in DC on a family vacation for my grandma's funeral. She served in the military along with my grandpa, so we went out to DC. They were buried out in Arlington. And one of the days in the city, I stumbled upon the Leica store in DC, and that was the first time I ever laid eyes on those cameras. And this was before I even owned a camera, if I'm not mistaken, or maybe it was, this might have been in 2017, actually, or 2018. So maybe right after I got my first camera. And yeah, I think the seed was just planted that day. And then, yeah, long story short, I guess what, 7 years, 6 years later, after I was shooting for 6 years, I kind of learned everything I needed to from the Sony system I got in 2019, and about how you use lenses and what specs work for you. And so I decided to sell off most of that system and just finally jump into the Leica world and landed on the Leica Q, the original one, the M240 and an M6, and then I got a 35 Summicron. The newest version, the spherical one, and then a 35 2.4 Summarit.
Yeah, that is so funny because my path to Leica was similar to you and started off with the Q2, then the N10 and the M6. So yeah, I guess it's a pattern that we can see. But more importantly, I think it's more the shooting experience. I mean, you did mention the Sony system, which is probably one of the most advanced and brilliant digital system in the world, and a lot of photographers are relying on it, and there's a reason for that, and eye autofocus and all this great stuff. But can you talk about how you relate to those Leica cameras. I mean, the Leica Q is a bit of a different beast because it is kind of modern, and it also autofocuses and so on, but more on the M240 and you know, film Leicas. How do you appreciate, or why do you keep shooting these cameras that technically are way less advanced than what you used to have?
Mm-hmm. I think I just hit a point too with my Sony where I was lugging around multiple lenses and filters and things. And I just kind of got sick of like the big camera bag, big system, heavy system. And then it also just started to feel robotic to me and like less than a camera. And you literally have a joystick on the back of the camera. You move a little focus point around, you hit a button. So it lost like its new camera, whatever feeling, I guess, as time went on, and started to feel more like a tool. And then after it felt like a tool, it just really started to feel like a computer. And I was like, yeah, I don't even think I need like this fancy of a system for what I shoot. And I wanted this small compact thing and something that still had like really good image quality. So that's when I just naturally decided, I was like, yeah, I'm going to get rid of this, most of this stuff, and go down the Leica rabbit hole. And I really just started with the Q because of cost. It's like way cheaper than getting into pretty much any M system. And yeah, after doing that, I was like, okay, I really like this Q. I thought the photos were pretty much just as good as my A7 R3 and any G Master lens I've ever put on it. Maybe not if I'm comparing like the 51.2 G Master. That lens is pretty dang special, but for the most part, I was like, I don't really see a difference between 42 and 24 megapixels unless I'm trying to crop hardcore. And I don't really feel like the Q lens is any less sharp or just like worse looking than a G Master. So then after those realizations, I was like, all right, let's just get the rangefinder. I know how to shoot manual. I have a 1953 Nikon S, which is a rangefinder. That was actually my grandpa's camera, and I got that restored and fixed. So I was shooting film on that. I already knew I enjoyed the rangefinder experience. So, you know, after all those things were kind of said and done, I was like, all right, just going to pull the trigger on the M240 and then decide if I want an M6 after that. And obviously we're here now, so
we're surrounded with red dot cameras. I completely agree with you, man. I mean, I was fully into the Nikon ecosystem and Fuji film, which I'm kind of still am for some aspect of my work, but I mean, it's about the shooting experience. It's not about the specs or the size of the sensor or the megapixels and so on and so forth. Do you use them professionally, or because I think you do video too, so how's that setup going for you?
So I kept my A7 R3, and then I think I have the 24-70 GM, the 70-200 GM, and then the 51.2 sold like pretty much everything else. So I kept that as like a backup system for video and also for like professional work. But I actually use my iPhone 15 Pro for video because it's just like, if you shoot that thing in log, it's crazy good.
Yep.
So I basically have the Sony for basically like just client work pretty much. Like if anyone hits me up or if I pitch a job and, you know, get something in, that's what I'll use it for. Or if I go on like the rare trip where I'm going somewhere kind of wild, I might want some zooms on me, then, you know, 2.35s, I guess, and a 28 mil. But other than that, you know, like the weekend and stuff, it's just, I'm always taking out the Leicas and one way or another, and just pulling out the Sony if I get a brand job in.
Got it. And last question about gear, but what is your daily driver? Is this still the Q or a mix with the M240? What's your daily driver?
I'd say the Q at this point. Yeah. It kind of depends on if I'm shooting film or not. If I want to shoot film for the day, then I'll take the M6 next to the 240 with those 2.35 lenses that I mentioned. But if it's just like a super low key day, then I just take the Q out by itself. And if it's like shooting after work or something, I'll take the Q as well.
Yeah, man. Q2 for me is still my most used cameras in the past, I would say, 3 years. I have a video on YouTube that talks about the fact that it's the most used in the past 2 years, but that's a year ago. So it's still the king for daily driver. It's such a great camera, and I agree that the Q is just as good. So, yeah, man, enough about gear. Let's go back to art. So you did mention that you do portraits. So this is something that I've always struggled with. Like, how do you get into a place where the person in front of you trust you? Sometimes you don't know necessarily if it's a client, that person. How do you make people comfortable? That's pretty much my question. And I know a lot of our listeners have the same exact question.
Honestly, I think like I don't really do portraits that much anymore. But back in the day, it was just like I'd just find a model on Instagram and you just kind of DM them. And then, you know, you just have to be yourself and like be kind and don't get straight into shooting. Just chat for a little bit, I think. And then once you're kind of warmed up, it might be a little awkward for the first like couple shots. But after that, like I think you just both start to flow. Nowadays, I don't really do much portrait stuff unless it's inside of a photo meet that I put on. I host monthly photo meetups here in the Portland area. And sometimes we'll do studio things. And so that's like all portraits. Other times models will maybe come to like a street photo walk or a waterfall hike. And then at that point, it's just like this really low key group setting where they just kind of start doing their thing and modeling. And then it's just understood that everyone's just kind of going to find their little spot and hover around this model and do their thing. So I think if people have like meetups around them that are portrait based, that's a really good way to get experience and learn how to work with models. Then after that, it's just you really just have to go for it and just find, you know, local people in your area and just be yourself and, you know, low key and easy to work with.
Yeah, I think people underestimate the power of just reaching out, right? So a lot of people are like, yeah, but how can I even start, you know, being a portrait photographer? Well, you've got a thing called Instagram and DM, to your point. And if you're a nice person and you're not a creep, you know what, and you're a talented artist and photographer, a lot of people will want a nice portfolio type of image of them. So you're totally right. And about communicating with the person, I guess the keyword is respect, right? Because again, there is a lot of mistrust in that space, and some other photographers that we won't name on this podcast kind of did some stuff that is not cool. So again, people are always a bit more reluctant to talking to strangers. But hey, a camera can be a nice way to connect with people. And speaking of which, I want to bring you on another topic where I, on my side, feel that photography is literally therapy. And this was also a topic that Tyson from Life of Feist and I discussed. But what's your relationship with the actual camera itself and the art of photography?
I would say therapy is definitely a good way to put it. And then at this point, it's almost just like an extension of myself. Going back to like the skateboard and BMX and bike thing, the bike and the skateboard definitely became an extension of myself. And when you're pedaling, you just kind of tune out everything. Or if you're cruising the skate park, you tune out everything and you just kind of go in your own little world. And I think that's how the camera is for me at this point. When I'm out shooting, I just like, it's just like a calming thing. And I'm just very tuned out of any distractions or like stress or whatever might be going on. I'm just like fully focused on the camera, fully enjoying the activity I'm doing. And on the therapy part, back in 2019, I guess is when it was, that was a super bad like mental space for me, because I was basically just out of school in what, 2018. So I was kind of living at home with my parents for a year and a half, which is fine, nothing wrong with them, but I think I was ready to be like out on my own and figure something out. And I didn't really want to be back in my hometown. It wasn't so much, you know, live with mom and dad. It was more so just like back in my hometown, don't really know where I'm gonna end up or move to. And I had this crazy hardcore like accounting job, and I didn't really like it, but I kind of needed to do it for the experience. So I felt like I was trapped, because it was like this really good high-end job for great experience, but I was also now stuck in my hometown. And I was like, what am I even, like, how do I even get out of this, you know, because I can't just quit this job. And I would have to like get a job to move, you know, like ideally. So then photography basically became therapy and escape from all that. And as soon as I'd clock out on Friday, I'd just go shoot, and I'd go shoot Saturday, and I'd go shoot Sunday, and it let me forget all about that. And then, you know, I'd be back grinding it out at work Monday through Friday, and then sometimes be hitting like job applications after work, trying to get somewhere, anywhere in California between like San Luis Obispo to San Diego or Portland or Seattle. And then that was really just the process for like, I think, like 5, 6, 7 months, maybe just grinding that out on the week, and then having that escape on the weekend. And the camera was kind of the vehicle for that, to help me through that.
It's crazy, huh? Like how a piece of metal and some sensors of film in it can help, you know, cope or go through difficult times. I'm always amazed every time I think about it. I'm like, wow. But it's also, of course, the relation you decide to have with that tool. I mean, to your own point, some people just see it as a work tool. Some other people see it as a creative outlet or something that they can tune the world out and then go fully in to basically build a new narrative in your brain. So that's pretty powerful. You are, though, working with a lot of brands. I see Polar Pro on there and so on and so forth. And that's another aspect of photography that, you know, people know a little bit less. And I think it was one of my fellow YouTuber who said, do you have to be a content creator to be a photographer in 2024? I want your hot take or your position, your point of view, at least on that, because I think I can say you are a content creator. You are creating content for yourself and for brands, but you're most importantly a photographer and an artist. So how can we even define ourselves in 2024 if we are in that space of photography and creativity?
Mm-hmm. Above all, I definitely say I'm a photographer, and then I guess followed up by a videographer. I hate the word content, like content creation, but I kind of think of it almost as like an umbrella term. Like if I am doing a YouTube channel, if I am filming little short films and then shooting photos, like technically that's all content, and like I think that's a fine use of it. But I think my definition of content creator is somebody who, like, I don't know how to really explain it a whole lot, but if you're making like those trend videos where it's like, I don't want to say people's work is not legitimate, but like if it just lives on social media and if in like 20 years it's not relevant, I would kind of describe that as content, if that makes sense. You know, like, yeah, just some of those goofy trends, whether it's in photography or not, or if it's just outside of photography and it's like some kind of meme video or whatever it might be. I kind of describe all of that as content, but I think it comes down to how you kind of need to look at yourself and your work. And a waterfall photo that I took 5 years ago, if it popped up somewhere 20 years from now, I feel like people might still be like, wow, that's like, where even is this? Like maybe someone hasn't seen it yet, you know, and they're like a teenager in there. It's just whatever. It's like the year 2050. And maybe they're seeing my picture of an Oregon waterfall for the first time, and then it makes them want to go there. But I just highly doubt that any kind of random meme trend style videos that are just fully made to go on social media are going to really be relevant long term. And I would package that stuff under content creation rather than like photography, videography, or art or something like that.
Yeah, I think you're right, Brian. I don't know if you're a bit like me, but when you start thinking about it, you kind of have to play the algorithm to get the work out there. I mean, unless you have gallery shows around the world, or, you know, and even galleries, sometimes they now look at, you know, the community you're building or the connections you have. So it's a bit of a catch-22 there. But what I really like is people focusing on legacy versus impact. It's a very different type of objective. You know, having an impact can be very, you know, can be like now, like having an impact and following the trends, to your point, and looking at what's trending and so on and so forth, versus building a legacy, something that will go beyond yourself or your time on this planet. That's, I think, more powerful. Not everybody can have a legacy, nor can everybody have an impact for that matter. But those are two concepts that I think as photographers, videographers, storytellers, we kind of have to juggle with, because yeah, you kind of have to have an audience if you want your stuff to be seen and interact mm-hmm. with people. So again, I don't, there's no right or wrong answer, and I love asking this question because everybody has a slightly different point of view, but everybody has, at least the people I talk to on this podcast, have a bit of a dilemma type of approach to it, because yeah, I kind of have to do it, you know, to be relevant in this day and age. I love when people like Joel Meritz are saying to younger photographers, like, focus on your craft. Focus on being on the street and shooting. Think about sharing your work or whatever next step after, not the other way around. So I think this is probably one of the most, and I published something on my Instagram today from him, which happens to be on Instagram too. But hey, he can do whatever he wants. We will follow. Anyways, so let's go back to enough of philosophy and about photography. I want to talk, Brian, about your work. Where do you see work moving forward? So have you ever published a book? Is that something that's in the works, a zine and so on and so forth? So what's your next move?
I'm one of those photographers that just doesn't have a next move, honestly. I just kind of figure things out as I go. And then, like I said, if I get a brand job in or decide I feel like pitching things out, I'll kind of try to navigate that. So it kind of just goes up and down with what I feel like doing. I mean, I have a full 9 to 5, you know, Monday through Friday job. So I think photography mostly lives as a hobby and just like for fun, going out on weekends to shoot. But I would like to do a photo book. I think that's really like my long-term goal, is like almost what you were talking about with building a legacy versus like an impact. I want to be like 85 or 90, whatever my old ripe age is going to be when I'm probably reaching the end of the clock here. And I want to have like a physical book that I can read and be like, okay, this book has photos from like the last, I don't know, I guess 50 years maybe, and make it kind of when I'm a lot older than I am now, where, you know, you can make a couple books, I guess. But yeah, that would be like something I want to do one day, is make a book. I just don't know how I would want to package that up. But more so, it's just a personal thing, you know, maybe not even to sell, just to like have and maybe mail them out to my friends or family. And it's like, hey, here's my whole last 10 years packaged up in this book. And then maybe I make one in the next 20 years. And then it's that section of my life. And then when I'm like 80, I'll be like, okay, let's sit down and go through 30, 40 years of photos and make my last book, and then have something you can actually physically flip through and like experience the things that I saw and pointed my camera at. So that's probably the only answer I have in terms of like a very defined project. Otherwise, just cooking up stuff for YouTube when I feel like it, getting like kind of BTS videos, and trying to make like a movie, almost like a short film. I don't know if you've seen anything that I've posted, but
yeah,
I try to make like 3 to 5 minute kind of like me going out shooting, share the photos, but then I narrate it and say, we went here, we did this, I took this camera. Yeah, just try to make it like a kind of more meaningful than like a goofy video, kind of like what I was talking about with content creation. But yeah, don't really have much I really plan on. I just go shoot, man. Like,
well, that's already more than a lot of people, to be honest. But man, I want to tell you this. The first time I printed a zine, it's not a book, I don't pretend to have a body of work to do a book. I'm far from there. And I'm just like you. I'm a professional hobbyist at photography, and I'm really passionate, but I do have also a 9 to 5, which happens to be in music, which is also a related topic that a lot of photographers seem to be having. Skateboard and music, those are the two trends, I think. Mm-hmm. But to your point, seeing your work printed and a physical object in this digital world that we live in, and we're constantly bombarded with notifications and screens and so on, when you see a photo of a moment in time that you took that will never come back, that means something to you, and you see it printed, oh my God, this is a revelation, to be honest, when you see it in a book format or a zine format for that matter. So I highly encourage you to do it, Brian. I think the outcome will be very, very positive, and then you'll be on a roll. You'll want to print a zine every month or a zine every quarter or whatever. But that's a very great practice that I started. I only have 2 zines out, but I'm already hooked, and I have a third one in the process. So let's connect. I'll show you how easy it is to do it.
Yeah, that'd be helpful. Part of it too is just like, I don't even know how to start that process, like where to go to get things made and whatnot, let alone just sit down and decide like what photos to put in there, you know.
That's the hardest part, man. That's the hardest part. Speaking of YouTube, so you started that a couple of months ago, 9 months ago, and you seem to be having so much fun. So talk to us a bit about the process of being on YouTube and filming stuff while photographing. Is that something that comes naturally for you? Have to really adapt or plan it? So how's your experience so far?
It's been pretty good. It's like, it's really hard for me to have to sit down and film a talking head thing, just because like you really have to be focused, and I don't have a desk area where I can just keep like a tripod. and then take the camera on and off it or whatever it might be, I always have to reset up, and it's like 15 minutes before I can actually sit down and film. And then in the bedroom I have is just also not like, I don't have a lot of space to work with. I basically have a little crevice to shove a tripod in. So I don't do it often for talking head stuff, and I might try to fire out like three or four in a day and just take a whole afternoon filming talking head stuff, because once I take that stuff down, it's like a hassle to get set back up, I feel like. But as far as like planning videos out, I just started with the gear videos kind of to, I guess, share my thoughts on moving from Sony to Leica. And then after that, I don't really have much of a plan. Like I said, I get some of those videos when I'm out and about shooting. I'll just hand my iPhone to my girlfriend and kind of be like, hey, this is kind of the clip I need here. We get it really fast and easy. And then I'll just go piece things together and post and make it a movie and narrate it and share the photos I got from that day. And that's probably what's going to become the main thing on YouTube. And whenever I have a subject I need to talk about, that's when I'll probably do a talking head thing. But I think I need to re-review my M240, because it's been, I think we're coming up on a year since I bought that. And I reviewed it basically a year ago to start my YouTube, and then kind of tapered off and didn't actually start posting till this year. And then I have a the leather skins we were talking about, I think, before we started. I'm going to make a video about that and just share kind of my thoughts on, like, I guess, like color theory, or like, what do you call it? Like color as self-expression, almost like choosing the color of shoes you want to wear or something, you know? So why I went with the certain colors on my camera, and then just where I got the leathers and who I had put them on and stuff, because I think that info is really good to share, because I think a lot of people want to do these things to their cameras, but they're like, I don't really know what, like, how do I even get a skin for my Leica? But I'd like it to not be black and maybe be like a pink or a brown or an orange or whatever it might be. So those are really the only two videos to sit down and talk about. The rest, just like I said, comes as I'm going out and photographing, and photographing is the focus always, and I just have to take the time to get some clips here and there.
Yeah, man, I really dig your Southern Washington coast video. I invite everybody to go see it. Very, very nice, nicely done. And yes, man, those conversions, I don't know how to say that, modifications of the letterette on the Leicas is beautiful. And please walk us through in a video, and people will see how. Well, I had that question, right? So pre-show, and like, how do you even do that? Where do you start? And do people do that? Did you do it yourself? So stay tuned and subscribe to Brian's channel if you want to know how to do that type of stuff. I mean, you do have a video featuring two of them with the new letterette, but I guess the next video will have to be on how you did it. There you go. Cool stuff, man. So where can people find you online? Where would you direct people to find more of your work and discover your photography?
Pretty much just my Instagram, Brian Atkins Photography, all one word. And then that's my website as well. Those are probably the two main things. My website, I don't update that often, but Instagram, I post literally every day. And then I've got the YouTube, also just Brian Atkins Photography. And then Threads, which is obviously, you can find that straight through Instagram. Same username, Brian Atkins Photography. Just keep it all simple. I think those are really the main platforms. And yeah, like I said, Instagram is going to always be the most up to date, and I'm sharing my recent work, and pretty much what I'm doing every weekend makes it out on the gram during the work week, really. So
Perfect, man. I'll put those links down below, and I highly encourage people to go subscribe to your YouTube channel and also to your Instagram. And we met on Threads, so big kudos to Threads for having a healthy, so far, community on the photography side of things, photographers of Threads, if you want to see a lot of us interacting and positively commenting on other people's work. And also, I'd like to end this show, Brian, on one question for younger photographers. So you were once, you know, that young guy who was inspired by other guys. So what, who would you say, you know, is a must follow or must discover that will give younger people the taste of, you know, being a photographer? So who would you recommend they follow outside of your work, of course, and mine? Who would you recommend following?
And that's always a tricky question, because there's so many. I
Top
feel
three,
like
top three.
Chris Burkhard probably is up there, just because he's one of the big name guys, and I think he does a really good job at sharing what it means to be a photographer a lot of the time and how to balance like social media and your work. And then I probably would have to say Short Stash, honestly. Just again, I think his body of work is a very good example of somewhere to aim to be in terms of having your style, locked in and discovering that for yourself. Even if it's not his style, it's just, again, it's a great example of what a really polished body of work can look like once you kind of unlock the way you see and view things. And in this weird kind of online influencer world, he seems to be a fairly down-to-earth kind of guy too. I don't see a lot of goofy stuff coming out on his page or, trying to monetize his platform and sell you silly digital products. It seems like he's also got the good mindset of wanting to be, an artist and a photographer above all else. So I think those two guys really are kind of who I looked up to. Chris Burkhardt first, and then Short Stash, which I found his work was just like, yep, all right. Him and Burkhardt kind of in the same level for me.
Cool, man. So I will put those links down below and I will go follow them myself. So again, Brian, I want to thank you so much for participating today. That was a very nice conversation. I think this is the first of many conversations. We've got so much other stuff to talk about. I want to convert now my Leicas because I've seen your videos and I'm inspired by those two guys you mentioned. And also I want to go in the Pacific Northwest because, man, this is so inspiring as a location. So again, thank you so much, Brian, for your generosity and your time today.
Yeah, of course. Thanks as well. It's always a blast to do a podcast. Haven't done many, so always stoked when someone's like, "Hey, come on and let's just chop it up, man." It's always a good time.
There's always a first time, and I'm happy that you've spent the time with us. And hopefully, the listeners can give this podcast a 5-star review if you enjoyed the conversation. And I'm Fred Ranger. You can find me on Instagram, and you can also find me on Threads, Fred Ranger, and also fredranger.com. And this is the Visual Storytelling Podcast. I wish you a very pleasant reminder of your week. Cheers.